Mike Werner here with another episode of the Friends with Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. And with me today to do the Tampa Bay Rays preview, would you expect anybody else other than me? But Randy Haynes, a brand new member of Friends with Fantasy Benefits. Randy, welcome aboard.
Hey, thanks, Mike. Thanks for having me on, man. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, so am I. Well, I'm kind of looking forward to it. I'm not going to say I'm that excited. But for people on Twitter or wherever that don't necessarily know who you are, why don't you give them your Twitter handle and let them know kind of what you're going to be contributing to for the site?
I'm on Twitter at RTH222. Currently working on some of the draft preview stuff with some teams in the ranks. I had an ADP piece up last week. I talked about some buying opportunities based off of last year's ADP. Went over a few guys that were 100 spots or more going later this year in NFBC League. So check that out. But yeah, just draft preview stuff, draft guide stuff.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm always interested in that. I've actually been bringing up a lot of disparities between last year's and this year's current ADP situation. And I think it's always really good to gauge what fantasy owners are doing in terms of value from a year-to-year basis, especially with guys that have inconsistencies from year to year, which I just find it really interesting. So good job on that.
Yeah, thanks, man. Yeah, there were some interesting guys in there. So
yeah, check it out. Check it out on the site for sure. As far as I go, check me out on Twitter at Mike Werner, FWFB. You already know me by now. So let's dive into the Rays. The first guy I'm gonna bring up is first and foremost, yes, Evan Longoria got traded. They've made a myriad of moves to this point. I don't think they're nearly done. So this team that we're going to go through right now will probably be significantly different even in a couple weeks. But as of right now, the main highlight for fantasy purposes that I will kind of start off with is Steven Souza. Last year was finally able to remain somewhat durable. He's entering his age 29 season, but coming into this year, he's coming in with a 30-16 home run stolen base output from 2017. Obviously, the batting average was going to be an issue, but I expect more of the same coming into this year. How about you?
Yeah, all three of those outfielders, kind of, not to jump too far ahead, we're pretty close in ADP. He's 169 right now on NFBC overall, 46 among outfielders. Yeah, if he stays healthy, you're going to get a good mix of power and speed. It was a little disappointing for anybody that owned him in the second half of last year to see a 183 batting average in August and a 152 in September. But if you were, be able to deal through all that, it was definitely worth the price you paid last year, and it's not, the hype hasn't gone too far for him so far this year.
I think the reason why he kind of fizzled in the second half total, he hit 203. And I think that part of the reason for that is because he has just had consistent years where he hasn't been on the field for 162 games. And I think that that's probably why he fizzled out a bit. He is making it a point this offseason to gain a little bit more muscle and be in a little bit better shape coming into 2018. That way he can perform for a whole season. As far as his power goes, he makes pretty hard contact, but not above league average or anything, but his power metrics underneath are pretty stable. I wouldn't necessarily expect 30 again if he plays a whole year, but I would expect somewhere in the 25-ish range. He does have some speed on him. I think he will be a candidate to steal double-digit bases once again. At 173, I think it's a pretty decent price, and I also think that, despite the fact that he strikes out a ton, like he had 34% strikeout rate last year, he's a really good asset for OBP formats. He had a 350 on base last year with a 14% walk rate, and he has made it a point to be a little bit more selective at the plate as well. So overall, I'm a real big fan of Steven Souza. I think he'll end up being a pretty good outfield three for people this year, and maybe we'll see him be more consistent as the season goes on, as opposed to just having one really good first half in August and then kind of just barreling down after that, except for batting average in August. But I digress. The next outfielder we'll talk about or slash DH is Corey Dickerson. Obviously in his second year of the Rays, he bumped his batting average back up to what it should have been. His BABIP was 290 in 2016, which kind of helped it explain his 245 batting average. But right now, going a little bit past pick 215 in NFBC early drafts that are going on, 27 bombs last year. What do you think about Corey Dickerson coming into this season?
Yeah, he was somebody I was big in last draft season because he was basically free. When I looked, I was surprised to see he didn't hit 30 homers after the start he got off to. I noticed he dropped his pop-up rate last year down to 5.7%, which was huge from double digits the previous 2 years. He seemed like a guy that once they moved him out of the leadoff spot, the production started to go down. He had 15 homers when he was hitting out of the leadoff spot. see if maybe Tampa messes with that again next year. But he's a good, depending on roster construction, when you're getting into the, you know, outfield 50 or below, if you're looking for somebody with some power upside and that batting average upside you talk about, he's definitely worth the spot. So I'm good for Dickerson this year.
Yeah, his batting average is going to remain above league average, probably by a fair margin. He's always been just a flat-out good hitter. Power has always been kind of coming and going with him, but his power metrics have gone down each of the last couple of years. So I don't think 30, once again, is in the cards in terms of home runs, but I do think he will hit at least 20 and also have a pretty decent batting average. I do expect the Rays to score a good amount of runs despite what their lineup looks like right now. But I do think Dickerson will probably be either the third hitter in the lineup, maybe cleanup somewhere in that vicinity. And I think he'll consistently be all right. Last year, he hit lefties pretty well. In addition to hitting righties at a 273 clip. So, I mean, like, that's a really good thing, good sign of things to come for him in terms of his batting average. I think that in a world in fantasy where we're looking for some batting average in spots, he's somebody that I think will be somewhat reliable. But he's not really flashy at this point. I think 217 is fair. I don't necessarily think you're going to get a ton of value from that, but I do think he's going to end up being pretty consistent and safe for you. He also hasn't gotten injured the last couple of years after having that real bad 2015 kind of derailing his season. So, yeah, pretty durable, safe batting average floor, pretty decent lineup, I think, in terms of runs scored and RBI opportunities. I think there's a lot that you can kind of bank on for somebody like Dickerson. Kind of rounding out the outfield right now is Denard Span. I'm not really yeah. enthused. What do you think about Span for this year?
Yeah, I mean, he is what he is. If you're going to go for him in an AL-only league, or even if you're in like a deeper OBP league, he still kind of gives you that skill. You know, you'll get 10 homers, 12 steals if he can stay healthy, what he's done the last couple of years. Maybe he gets dealt. There's a mutual option for 19 where it only includes a $4 million buyout, so I could see a team taking a chance on him if they're in a pennant race and short on outfielders. Maybe he gets dealt, but he'll be who he is. You know, there'll be a DL trip in there. It's nothing to get too excited about, is what he is at this point.
Yeah, he's a pretty decent table setter. That's what I'll say. He's an AL only like outfielder four. You know, somebody that is going to hit for a pretty decent batting average based on his contact ability. He's had an 86% contact rate or better his whole entire career, except for the first couple years. And his walk rate isn't exceptional, but he's somebody that, you know, he's 34 years old. He's had a myriad of injuries, but whenever he has remained on the field, especially the last couple of years, he's been able to have a little bit of pop and speed. And that's obviously good for fantasy. Hitting on top of the lineup, I think, will help. And, you know, the fact that he has remained pretty stable against right-handed pitching will probably do him some good as well. I mean, 284, 289, 335, 314 against righties the last 4 years. That's probably a good sign for him going into this year. He could get dealt, I agree, but we also need him to a degree. So I think Dickerson will end up not playing the outfield much. Span will probably end up starting either in left field, probably left field. Sousa's arm's pretty strong out there in right, so they'll keep him out there. But regardless, between Span and Kiermaier, who we'll talk about in a second, like one of them will probably get injured and we'll need one of them to kind of slide over to center, or we'll need Span to slide over to center at some point. But talking about Kevin Kiermaier, let's transition to him really fast. Each of the last 2 years, he has been injured in some capacity. Despite that, he has double-digit home runs in four straight seasons, double-digit stolen bases, 15 or more stolen bases in three straight seasons. What's your expectations on Kiermaier right now, currently being drafted about 160 overall in NFBC?
Again, about the same with all three of these outfielders. I think when you're getting into that range, maybe kind of depends on roster construction a little bit. If you're looking for more speed, you're obviously going to go with a Kiermaier. If you've got a good bit of everything built up, you can take a chance with batting average and Sousa, Dickerson. We already talked about the power and batting average floor. With Kiermaier, you know, you see two seasons, you know, 21 and 16 steals each of the last two seasons. His K rate ticked up just a little bit last year, and so, as well the pop-up rate. Not too concerning, but something, I guess, to keep an eye on if you do end up with Kiermaier. But he's going about where he is, you know, 40th among outfielders. That's a good price I'd be willing to pay, again, depending on kind of roster construction. I do like Kiermaier as a player, though. He's somebody I end up with on a lot of teams.
Yeah, I think 2020 upside is certainly there. I'm assuming that they're going to hit him second in the lineup. That's where they have him slotted right now on the roster resource page. They had him lead off at times. They've dropped him in the lineup at times. But at large, I think he will probably stay at the second spot. He did see a little bit of a decrease in his fly ball percentage. I don't know about the pop-up percentage, but fly ball rate went down about 6 percentage points from 2016. And he ended up having a 50% ground ball rate. So as far as like him surpassing 20 home runs, I think that naturally he will, but he also has to stay on the field. And when you look at his health grade, it's probably not great right now. It's probably a D or so, according to Baseball HQ. And that's obviously a problem when you're looking at taking a guy in the middle rounds. You know, 160 is what, somewhere in the vicinity of like a 7th, 8th, 9th round pick.
Yeah.
And you're probably going to be relying on him as a guy at that spot that's going to go 20-20. Other players going around him, specifically like outfielders, you have somebody like Mandy Margot, who I know is picking up some helium. I know I just heard Paul Spohr likes him, so obviously everybody else is going to be on board there. I just want to make it clear, I liked Mandy Margot before I knew Paul liked him, because all of a sudden now I've been touting Mandy Margot and everybody probably thinks I'm an idiot. But
Paul's got that magic.
He does. Yeah, him and Jason Collette and Eno Saris, like all three of them, as soon as they like somebody, it's kind of out the door. But also, Adam Eaton is going near Kiermaier. Ozzie Albies is a very trendy shortstop pick that I think could also go above him by the time the market settles as draft season kind of continues here. But if you want Kiermaier, you're going to have to pay a pretty big price for him. And as far as I'm concerned, I don't mind going that route, but you are going to be essentially taking a risk on his health, which obviously based on the last two seasons is not the best thing to do. At the same time, though, I do think he has 20-20 upside with like a 270-ish batting average based on his contact profile. And overall, that's not a bad thing to look for right there. But at the same time, there is a ton of risk based on his just how reckless he is in center field on defense. And on top of that, just the fact that he hasn't been able to stay on the field. Out of the four seasons he's been in the league, you know, one season he surpassed 500 at-bats. So that definitely has to be baked in. Let's transition
Over
in
the slow. Some of the other guys on staff got me into an NFBC, and Margot. I actually doubled up Margot and Polanco, and then Kiermaier was the next outfielder right after him, followed by Eaton. So that's about, and that was rounds 11 crossing over into 12. I needed some speed at that point, double up with Margot and Polanco, but Kiermaier was somebody that I had third on that list. So he's going about in there, and it makes sense. Margot's going to get his helium, like you're saying, it's going to go up. So.
Yeah, that's not a bad spot, though, to get him. I would say I'm pretty comfortable getting him at that spot. So it depends on where he falls to. Some people are higher on Kiermaier than others. I know he had a good amount of buzz going into last season, and he probably disappointed a little bit for most owners. But if he starts slipping, I'm definitely on board.
Yeah,
let's definitely talk about Wilson Ramos, who I am definitely excited about for this year. He came off a career year in 2016, obviously had that devastating knee injury and was out a good portion of the 2017 season. He did bop 11 home runs and 200 at bats, essentially 260 average. The contact rate ended up being 83%, which is awesome, especially for a catcher. Hard contact remained pretty consistent with what he did in that 2015 season. Actually, it was a little bit up from that year, but overall, we're looking at a guy that despite a 270 BABIP, for his career, he's a 290 guy, but despite a 270 BABIP, 260 batting average, 11 home runs, probably going to hit fifth or sixth in this lineup. 30 years old, contract year. What are you thinking about Ramos?
Yeah, he's a good buy with where he's going. He's going ninth, about the ninth catcher off the board. I do think 16 is probably going to end up being his career year, but that doesn't mean there isn't a good opportunity for him here. You like the power. You like the parks he's going to be hitting in. And with the state of catcher, it's, you know, for a catcher one, it's you can't do much worse with the price you're paying. So it's a good spot for Ramos.
Yeah, right now he's going somewhere in the vicinity of what, pick 180, and that's about fair. I mean, if I'm looking up catchers that went last year about that spot, let's see. Pick 180 last year, you had guys like Wellington Castillo, Brian McCann, Russell Martin, Matt Wieters. Those are all guys that went about that spot last year, and you know, there was some disappointments in there, but for the most part, it's kind of the way it goes with catcher. You're going to hit on some, you're going to miss on some, but essentially, if you have one guy that you can kind of rely on in a one catcher format to be at least league average, then you're okay. I do think Ramos will end up being at least a catcher 10 this year, which is pretty safe, you know, especially when you're factoring in his overall cost. I also think he's a candidate to be dealt at any point, especially if the Rays aren't competing. They will definitely deal him to a team that is contending so that they can get something for his overall 2 years that he's been with us and everything, but we'll see. I think the Rays could be sneaking competitive, but I say that every single year and they end up not, so
yeah, you gotta talk yourself into it.
Yeah, we gotta beat those Orioles, which we've had a tough time doing these last few years. For sure.
Yeah, well, that's the time for another podcast. I don't have time to talk about Dan Duquette today. So
let's transition to first base. Brad Miller, right now he is going essentially free at this point, but last year really tumbled. 9 home runs, 200 batting average. Is there any positive regression in sight for Brad Miller?
Maybe a little, but it's nothing that's worth paying for, in my opinion. Kind of just a wait and see guy. If you end up with him as a late stash in a deep mix or AL only, it's, you know, take a shot on him. You never know when that pop's going to come back, but I just kind of ignore him for now. Wait and see what happens when the season starts. Somebody to keep an eye on him. He does tend to be a pretty streaky player throughout his career, even when he is having better seasons than others, but no one I'm going to lose sleep over if I don't end up with him on the end of my bench.
Right now, you can still get him as a second baseman in NFBC. He doesn't have first base eligibility quite yet, depending on which format you play in. If it's 20 games, then he doesn't. But if it's 10, then he probably does at this point. But as of right now, I think that he's definitely due for some positive regression at this point. There's no way that he's going to have another season full time where he's going to be, you know, hitting 200 again. I just don't think he's that bad. Now, his contact rate was a career low of 67% last year, and honestly with the Rays it has tumbled. It was 73% his first season, 67% in 2017. His walk rate did get much better last year, and it went all the way up to 15%, which obviously wasn't a zero for you in on-base percentage leagues, but overall his fly ball rate is still consistent enough with a guy that can hit for decent power. I think that his power metrics will probably rebound a bit to his career levels, and you know, last year was just really kind of a lost season. Getting him for free, I don't mind that price, especially if you can use him at second base for the whole entire year. That offers you some power on your team that you literally don't have to pay for at all, and I just think there's nowhere to go but up for somebody like Miller. He's one of those guys that you can get for free that can potentially hit up to, you know, 20, 25, 30 home runs if everything played out right. And that's another reason not to go super heavy on power with no batting average early in your draft, because there's guys like this everywhere.
Yeah, I agree.
Adini Echeverria, if I can ever pronounce his name right. I found something really odd about him in the month of, or actually the second half of the year. He had an insane fly ball rate, especially for his like career levels, which I found really weird. And at the same time, he was making much harder contact. He had a higher contact rate than any other time in his career for the season in 2017. And he was in the top, like upper echelon of the league among hitters in hard contacts in the second half as well, which I just found really, really crazy. At the same time, this is a guy that for the season went 8-4 in home runs, stolen bases, and hit .261. So like really on the surface, we're not seeing a lot of fantasy production here, but I did find that interesting. Is there anything interesting to you about Echeverria?
I actually noticed something similar. I mean, his homer to fly ball rate doubled from the previous season, and I then noticed the major increase in fly ball rate over the second half. It's something to monitor, but again, even with that drastic change, it still only got him to 8 homers and, you know, just a tick under 100 games. So there's no speed there either. So just maybe something to keep an eye on. Maybe he is somebody that made an adjustment last year that he can build on, take over into the season, and he ends up being somebody that's a hot waiver wire at a couple weeks into the season. But for now, it's something to notice, but nothing I'm going to invest in.
Yeah, defense first player, I'm really not interested at the moment. I just found that pretty interesting, the fact that he just all of a sudden out of nowhere started hitting the ball really hard and in the air. And it's just an odd change and approach change for somebody that for the most part has been a non-factor for fantasy. Let's move over to Matt Duffy, kind of the last player here in the infield. He is right now slotted to be the starting third baseman with the trade of Evan Longoria. As of right now, his offseason has been amazing. He says right now he feels better than he has felt in multiple years. He admits that going into last year, he didn't feel quite confident in his feet. I think it's an ankle injury that's been kind of plaguing him these last couple of years. At the same time, can we reasonably expect for a guy that literally hasn't played since, I mean, months into the 2016 season to be a full-time player, and that's not even factoring in a possible fantasy asset to us? Probably not a great way to go, but I do think, based on the fact that he is so positive about the way this offseason has went, that he is pretty much a full go right now going into camp and everything, that probably is a good sign that he is going to be at least a somewhat full-time player for the Rays, at least as of right now. What are your thoughts on Duffy going into this year? Another guy that's going absolutely free. Is he, I mean, he's obviously an AL only guy if you're going to go that route, but how good could he possibly be?
And I'm not with all the, you know, you hear feet injuries, and I think it was an Achilles injury in there as well as with an ankle. And you just wonder if he's ever going to get back to, he had some 20 steal seasons in the minors, if he's ever going to even approach that at all. I think best case you're looking at, maybe he can get you a double double. He can do 10 plus homers, 10 plus steals if he can stay healthy. I have him down as third base only, which doesn't help. If you're, you know, looking at that as your third baseman, he probably doesn't play there much other than an AL-only league, like you're saying. So, again, like at Echeverria, maybe somebody you keep an eye on. Maybe he's a waiver wire ad if it looks like he is healthy. And if he is going to run a little bit, that'd be the big thing, if he can get back to running like he did in the minors. But I'm not, again, not too very confident in it. I'm rooting for the guy, but nothing I'm banking on.
Yeah, a guy whose best fantasy skill is hitting for batting average and stealing some bases, it's probably not the best thing to have happen to.
Yeah, as
to
a foot injury, yeah.
Yeah, to get multiple for it, that yeah. required season-long surgeries, that's probably not the best. But, if you're trying to be, I guess, more positive about his outlook for this year, you can say, hey, you know, maybe this is all behind him. This is me as a Rays fan with, you know, obviously some positive thoughts on this situation. But like, if you're really kind of going to ignore the injury risk, I think that, you know, double digit steals is in the realm of possibility. And, you know, double digit home runs is probably the one that's not as possible. But at the same time, he's done it before. He had a 12-12 season back in 2015. I mean, he's only 27 years old. If the speed isn't completely gone, then he could be an AL-only asset. I don't mind if you're going to, you know, just take a shot on him at the last round of your AL-only if you want to see what happens. But I do think his batting average is good enough to be like 275, 280 with, you know, some decent counting stats, depending on how good the Rays lineup is. But the power is something that's not going to really be great, especially for the position he plays. And the stolen bases are obviously a massive risk based on the fact that he had multiple surgeries on his ankles. So big problem, but we'll see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
As far as this bench goes, Malik Smith is probably the guy that highlights the bench the most for me, based on, for fantasy purposes at least. Pretty obvious that he has speed for days. He also has some massive defensive problems. If you ever watch him, I'm not even going to look at speed or at defensive grades for him, because I really don't need to see them. He muffed on multiple balls last year in the outfield. His arm isn't the greatest either, but obviously the speed is there, and whenever there's speed, we certainly are interested for fantasy purposes. So going 342 and right now projected to be on the bench, what's your thoughts on Malik Smith?
Well, the good news is he's got some guys in front of him, like we already mentioned, with Span and Kiermaier, Dickerson, Souza, all four of them really, that have never really been able to stay healthy consistently. So that's good news. But he doesn't, the hit tool's not really anything special. There's no power there at all. You're looking for just some speed, and hopefully, like you said, with the defense, I did notice that earlier, his defense was a lot worse than I expected to be. As somebody that's only seen him occasionally play, but you understand the profile, I figured his defense would be better. Yeah, he's worth a stash, and only maybe your deepest a mix, but if he gets playing time, he'll definitely run. But is he going to get the playing time?
Yeah, I think that he will get a good amount of playing time, because it's just a matter of time, you know, not to be redundant, but I think it's just a matter of time before one of these Rays gets injured. Souza has been injured multiple seasons. Corey Dickerson is a couple years away from being injured, but he, you know, has been injured substantially in his career at some point. Brad Miller isn't the most durable guy in the world. Matt Duffy, I mean, that has no relevance to Malik Smith, but Matt Duffy gets injured obviously pretty consistently, or has been. Dart Span is getting older. Kevin Kiermaier has a long history of this stuff. So like, the when you're looking at it from a perspective of just being like completely, I guess, averse of risk, then I guess like you would assume that Malik Smith wouldn't get a lot of playing time. But like, if you're looking at it from I guess the standpoint of what's most likely to happen, or what looks like it will happen based on these last few years, then I would think that Smith is going to get a pretty decent amount of playing time. At the very end of it, like, he had 256 at bats last year and had 16 stolen bases. Like, if he ends up getting 400 at bats, I think 30 is definitely in the cards for him. And he didn't even get that many opportunities. His stolen base opportunity rate was 27%. I think that he could end up, if you even bump that up to like a 40% clip, that means he will be a candidate to steal 30 to 40 bases. He is as fast as anybody in the league. Maybe not Billy Hamilton or D. Gordon fast, but he's right there. He's maybe a sliver slower than those two, but he's right up there. And if he ended up getting the opportunity, I think that he would end up, I mean, being really a fantasy asset for you. So I'm on board with where he's going, because the upside or potential upside is that of a guy that can steal 40 bases, and that's like exactly what we're looking for. Yes, it will come with no power. Yes, the batting average based on his hit tool might not be there. It might be like 250, but you know, Billy Hamilton's been getting drafted in the top five rounds, and I've been condoning it, and the guy can't hit for shit. So like, it's really no problem with me taking somebody like Malik Smith, who is absolutely free, 25 years old. I have no problem with it.
Yeah, in the state of the game, if you have anybody that's got some playing time that could go on even a 30 steal pace, if he doesn't get there, you just take the pace for a month and go from there. The steals, you know, just try to bank those steals whenever he's got the playing time.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, and his overall hit tool or plate skills, I mean, 8% walk rate last year, 76% contact rate. That's usually or typically conducive of a guy that's going to hit in the vicinity of 260 to 270. And, you know, last year he hit 270. And his speed obviously helps with his batting average too. If he keeps the ball on the ground, which he does, you know, 61% ground ball rate in 2016, 50% ground ball rate on batted balls in 2017, then he should be able to beat out a lot of those as well. And then also not be caught in double plays as much. The speed really helps in multiple facets of the game that we don't think about in fantasy because all we're looking at is kind of raw box score numbers. But, you know, the more times he gets on first, the better. And, you know, 8% walk rate, I think, is definitely better than most probably think from Malik Smith. He has the potential to be a guy that really shoots up, especially if there's like a preseason injury, like in spring training, he has the chance to really shoot up in draft board. So if you're in an early draft, I think I'm completely on board taking him for a really cheap cost and just kind of seeing what happens, because more than likely one of these guys are going to get injured and he's going to end up slotting in, which is exactly what happened with Kiermaier last year. That's why Smith got 16 stolen bases in the first place. So that kind of tells you what story could be written about him this year as well. Daniel Robertson's on the bench. I've never really been a fan offensively for him. Is there anything else you really want to add there?
Yeah, you covered it. There's not a lot here on this bench. It's kind of disappointing, other than maybe some of the guys that are fringe to make the roster that maybe we'll touch on. So
yeah,
Robertson's not one of them.
Yeah, Robertson is he is really good at giving good at bats, like from a professional standpoint. Like if you're watching him, really good at not swinging at bad pitches, going deep into counts, stuff like that. But overall, he's not a fantasy asset. Mekhi Johnson or Mika Johnson is on roster as of right now. I don't know if he'll make the club. We got him off waivers. He's obviously bounced around a bit since having like he had a little bit of fantasy kind of amusement, I would say, a couple years back when he was supposed to be. Yeah, because I mean, it amused me because like everybody was so high on him after he came up through the White Sox system and he was going to start one year at second base for the White Sox and end up being a complete train wreck. And I was amused by that because everybody was so high on somebody that like literally hadn't done anything. I think at that time he was being taken in the top like 150 to 200, and like it came with no reason whatsoever. It just was something. It was just an irrational belief that all these fantasy owners had for somebody that hadn't done anything in the major leagues at this point. But I digress.
Yeah, he's just a much worse version of Malik Smith, if there is such a thing.
Absolutely.
It's Micah Johnson. So
the more I go through this team, the more I'm kind of getting depressed. So yeah, we probably won't be competitive this year, but fingers crossed. We'll see. Jesus Sucre is the backup catcher. No fantasy relevance there. While we're still kind of talking about bats, we will highlight a couple of guys that I think will get some type of playing time this year. Obviously, some will be higher upside than others. Matt Thompson will cover it a little bit more in the prospect minute, more than likely. But Joey Wendell is somebody that we grabbed from Oakland in a trade. I've always liked his overall hit tool. Hasn't really translated to success yet in the majors, but I am a little bit intrigued by him, just kind of an overall natural hitter from whenever I've watched him. Again, like the stats won't really back that up when you're looking at his overall raw box scores and everything, but I mean, I do think that he's a pretty decent natural hitter and might be able to, you know, end up starting the season with the club, possibly. It's like a, I don't know, 50-50 chance at that point. Do you have any thoughts on Joey Wendell?
He could be a sneaky asset, like you said, in an AL only league if he were to win the job. There's no real walk rate there at all, but were some 10 plus steal seasons in the minors and some double digit homer seasons in the minors. If he can get a hold of playing time, maybe he gets hot. He could be worth a stash like in an AL only league, but nothing I'm banking on again. So
Ryan Schimpf, another guy, 30 years old at this point, could play multiple places in the Rays infield. He was grabbed off waivers, I believe, or it might have been a trade. Either way, he's right now slated to be on the AAA team, but I don't think that he will stay there. I honestly think he will probably open the year on the Rays club. I it's between him and Mika Johnson, possibly Daniel Robertson, but I think that they want to kind of keep Robertson for a little while because he is pretty good defensively, and he's also decent against lefties. So if you want, you know, Robertson will probably stay on the club, but Shimp has the possibility to start the year as a part-time player against righties. He's always exhibited a pretty good amount of power, but there is no batting average here. At the same time, he does have a really good walk rate, so it's kind of like an extreme profile at this point, but I just wanted to kind of mention Shimp. I don't know if you have any thoughts on him either.
Nah, you hit on it. No, there's no batting average there, but there's big time power there. If he can ever try to just, even if he raises batting average 55 points, that would get him to 200 last year. So there's not a lot to look forward to there.
Yeah. Christian Arroyo obviously was the big get for the Rays and the Longoria deal. He could start the year on the club. I don't think he will. They'll probably kind of try and, you know, keep his clock down and everything. But last year wasn't great in his small sample size in the major leagues. Do you have any kind of, what do you think he could do this year? Say he started the year on the big league club playing full time, whether it be at second base or at third base. What do you think he could potentially do?
Maybe it's because they both came from the Giants, but there's a little Danny Duffy in him, maybe with not quite as much of the speed and the batting average, but he could kind of offer some of the same things. Again, if he's got playing time, he's definitely worth somebody to look at. Probably a better real life player than a fantasy player, as what he projects out to be. But there's definitely some interest there. He could still definitely has the hit tool that he could definitely improve on that as his career goes along.
Yeah, he's obviously better than what he showed last year in the minimal time. At the same time, I think that he is a fringe fantasy player right now. And I would say if he was going to be a full-time, if I knew for a fact he'd be a full-time player going into this season, I probably would grab him as like an end-of-the-bench type guy in an AL only, and that's pretty much where he's at. I agree. He's got more power than Matt Duffy, but at the same time, he's not really good on the base pass. He's definitely a better batting average guy than he was last year. I think last year he hit like 200 in his minimal time, but overall not that sexy of a profile. Willy Adames, I think, will be on this team. I think that he is definitely worth a add if you are drafting early, because there is a chance that they just bring him up really soon. I know that there have been talks at times of him getting an extension early because the Rays are in love with this guy. But at the same time, you're looking at a team that has been fairly conservative with their prospects for the most part. He did play in a winter league this year. I think it was the Dominican League. I'm not 100% positive which league it was, but either way, like kind of some wins and losses for him as a whole on the season in 2017. But I do think he makes the majors at some point this year. And you know, right now, he's an absolutely free pick. He could potentially be the franchise for this team coming up. So I don't know if you have any thoughts on Adames for 2018 alone, but what are your thoughts?
He's really the only one in this group that we've mentioned that has that potential to kind of change your season and be a mainstay once he gets some real playing time. But again, with what the Rays do with their prospects, they're gonna keep him down and as long as they possibly can, and then maybe even a little bit longer on top of that. So he'd be the best case scenario, but it's very unlikely, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think he's worth a grab in deep mix formats, especially like NFBC, where it's kind of draft and hold. I don't mind grabbing him just to see what happens later on. Some people grabbed Carlos Correa a few years back at the end of their drafts and ended up, you know, obviously reaping the rewards of that. So, I think Adames, while he won't necessarily be Correa, I think that he does have that type of tool set. And he's probably the most exciting prospect for the Rays on the hitting end in a long, long time. I'm trying to think of the last one that I was super excited about from the hitting end, and honestly the biggest
Will
one
is Myers, I guess.
Yeah, Will Myers is probably the right one. We only got to see him for a couple of years, but I think that that's probably the last time we've had an offensive prospect that was as highly rated as Adames is or as Myers is or was. But at the same time, you know, it's really the waiting game with the Rays, and we'll have to kind of see if he comes up fairly early or not. Jake Bowers is the last guy that I think is relevant for our talk, not just Matt's prospect minute, just because I do think right now with the hole at first base, I don't think the Rays want to depend on Brad Miller at first all year long. Bowers had an amazing spring training and overall season in 2017. He's pretty much ready at this point. I think that he's a polished enough hitter to play first base right now. If they wanted to go that route, he could also play outfield too. But any thoughts on Jake Bowers if and when he gets the call?
There's definitely some interest there. Maybe the Rays can give him Logan Morrison's locker from last year. Maybe that'll a little bit of that'll rub off on
or juice, like, whatever it was.
Hey, let's not go. Let's just call it the Lucky Locker or something. Yeah. But yeah, Bowers is definitely somebody to keep an eye on. But again, you don't know what's going to happen there long term. So they do have a huge hole at first base though. So it's there for the taking if he can kind of hone that in. So.
Yeah, the Rays aren't done. They have a couple guys that, you know, they're going to pick up off the scrap heap that are going to end up starting for this team. They do it every year, especially with first base. They've just it's been a revolving door of players these last few years. So that's just the way it goes with them. But let's transition to the one thing that actually makes me happy about this team. That's the pitching staff. Chris Archer right now being taken as a top 50 pick. Last year ended up throwing for 200 innings for the third straight year, really kind of the fourth straight year if you factor in 2014 where he had 195 innings. But you know, again, top 50 pick right now according to NFBC. I'm trying to see, he had a really big gap between his home and away ERA last year. 3.26 home ERA, 4.97 on the road. I don't necessarily think that that's really going to continue, but it is kind of a fear going into this season that he has been struggling on the road. What are your thoughts on Archer coming up for 2018? Do you think he gets dealt? If it doesn't get dealt, like, how do you think his whole season will kind of unravel?
I love Archer. I mean, there was that little scare last September where he had that start against, I believe it was the White Sox, where he gave up two homers to start off the game. And I think everybody kind of,
yeah,
you know, kind of was on alert there. And he had a couple rough starts after that. His ERA was 3.60 after August. And then when he had this horrible September, it ended up bumping to 4.07, which is where it was, which is still pretty good considering those starts he did have in September. Huge K guy. Love Archer. If he gets dealt, that doesn't, I mean, unless he gets dealt to Coors, it doesn't do anything for me. The road ERA difference, I guess, can be contributed to the division. There's a lot of tough parts to pitch in that division. And
yeah,
some, and even the lesser lineups like Toronto and Baltimore, they're shooting for the fence every time. So it's that kind of makes a little bit of sense to me. It doesn't worry me. So yeah, I'm all aboard Archer, top 15 starter. Yeah, I'll get him where I can. Love him.
Yeah, I agree. I like Archer a ton, obviously. The one thing that I've never really gotten over with Archer is that he compares to me, at least back in the day with Matt Garza. They have very similar arsenals. I would say Archer isn't quite as polished as Garza was at the time, but at the same time, I think that they're both, you know, reasonably the same. I do worry about slider dominant pitchers because overall, like, they end up getting injured faster. As of now, Archer has remained on the field and steady throughout his whole entire career at this point. So, I mean, that's kind of an irrational thought for me to just think somebody has an injury risk when they really haven't had to, you know, miss time at this point. But he was a top 30 starter last year. I'm assuming he will remain relatively the same. Really, when you look at his month-by-month stats, he was just consistent through and through. I understand, like, maybe as a whole, his season wasn't as great as most people probably were hoping for, but month-to-month, like, he was just consistent. 3.43 ERA in April, 4.05 in May, 4.35 in June, 3.41 in July, 3.13 in August. So, like, he did blow up, like you said, in September, especially in that one start, but his velocity remains really good. The home runs were a problem once again for a second straight year. Maybe you can kind of get some regression to the mean there positively for him. His first pitch strike rate bumped back up to 62% after falling to 58% in 2016. And his strikeouts overall went up. The walks were fine. He did give up home run or fly balls about the same rate that he has the last couple of years. And it's kind of slowly crept up a bit. But in general, I'm a fan of Archer. I think he's going to end up once again being a top 30-ish starter. In an exceptional year, he could be a top 10 guy. But as of right now, I don't think he is made to be an ace for your staff, probably a solid number two. And that's about where he's being taken right now. I'm trying to remember off the top of my head where he was taken last year in drafts. It was probably somewhere in the same region.
Yeah, it was in that same, it was
50. I don't have exactly.
It in front of, yeah. I would say it was in that exactly. Same, like, yeah, it was in that same 10 to 17 range, I would have guessed. But yeah, he was in that same range.
That's crazy. Rarely do guys go in the same spot 2 years in a row. Pretty odd. Let's transition over to Jake Odorizzi, a rather uninspiring option. Actually, he was part of that Will Myers trade back in the day, I believe. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah,
he was.
Yeah,
from the Lakers. or from the Royals. Yeah. But Odorizzi last year ended up going 143 innings. He had a couple or he had one injury issue, I believe. But his metrics had him at a 5.01 ERA underneath. So he obviously outperformed that a bit. Strong fly ball pitcher pitching in a stadium that is usually pretty decent at keeping balls in the park. But obviously, like you alluded to earlier, Camden Yards, Yankee Stadium, Fenway in spots, like there's just Toronto, Rogers Stadium or Rogers Field, whatever it is all of those are really problems for him. Last year, he ended up having a home run rate that was at 1.9 per nine. That was a career high or career low, whichever way you want to look at it. 16% home run to fly ball rate. I'm getting a little bit of like Derek Holland-esque about Jake Odorizzi, and that's really kind of hurting my feelings a bit. What about you?
That's disappointing. A couple of years ago, I was big on Odorizzi. You could kind of see where that progression was going, and last year the strikeout rate has been almost identical three straight years in a row, so that's not going anywhere. And like you said, with what the expected ERA was, a 2.27 BABIP, and he still was only able to get his ERA down to 4.14. It pains me to say it, but there's not a lot of hope going forward for Odorizzi. I think there could be, I hope there's not, but there could be a blow up here. The walk rate was even up 3% last year, so probably somebody that even it's a discount at pitcher 73 right now, or starting pitcher 73. I'm not feeling it. So unfortunately, which pains me because I used to love Odorizzi.
Yeah, he implemented a split change a couple of years ago. And, last year he ended up using it about the same amount he did in 2016. But he's really been going more towards a cutter. And that's what he used last year, 15% of the time, which was a career high. I don't really love the pitch in general. It's okay. He did end up getting 13% whips on it last year, which is okay in itself. But at the same time, he's having a real problem with getting ahead in counts. Like last year, for instance, he had a 54% first pitch strike rate. He did have a 12% swing strike rate, which is great for his strikeout numbers, but it really didn't show because it ended up being the same strikeout rate as it has been the last couple of years. But he has, for now the fourth straight year, fallen in first pitch strike rate, which if you end up being behind in the count more times than not, then you're probably going to end up struggling a bit. And that's where we're kind of at with Odorizzi. I think that the 3.35 and 3.69 ERAs that we saw a couple of years ago are probably a thing of the past. I'm kind of just hoping for him to be a guy that you can have at the back end of your team, especially in deeper formats, more so in deeper formats, that can kind of help you out there a bit. But I don't really see anything getting better here. If anything, I see it getting a little bit worse, and that's obviously not something that I'm really in for. So unfortunate, but that's probably the facts with somebody like Odorizzi for this year.
Yeah, the only thing you really look forward for him is, like you said, with the cutter usage going up, maybe he reevaluates himself in the offseason and steers more away for that, like you said, back to that split change. But unless something major like that happens, it's definitely trending in the wrong direction.
Yeah, it's just, it's unfortunate, but overall, whatever.
Yeah.
As far as the next pitcher that we're going to go through, it's going to be Blake Snell. I'm obviously excited. We've been waiting. He started the year off in the rotation, and while he had a pretty decent, on the surface, a pretty decent 3.42 ERA, his expected ERA, or xFIP that a lot of people call it, was 6.13, 1.48 whip. I mean, he really struggled at the beginning of the year. It finally ended up being a demotion for him after things kind of came to the surface. But he did come back in the second half and put up a 3.28 ERA, 1.15 whip. It's 12% swinging strike rate. Did a really good job of, getting his strikeouts like we've always kind of hoped for. He kind of reined it in a bit. He did continue to struggle getting ahead in counts, which is his main problem. Fastball command, it's really, really a problem for Snell. But if you are hoping for a massive kind of breakout this season, I'm not really going to deter you the other way, because like there's a possibility here, it's kind of slim, but there's a possibility that once he moved to the middle of the mound, he ended up really getting positive results. It didn't really show up in the first pitch strike rate, which is what I'm really hoping for him to gain that fastball command. But if that change is kind of more of a permanent thing that he's going to continue doing, then we could see him have a little bit better fastball command, which could really help his insanely good curveball and changeup. That's also kind of getting better as we go along as well. So three really high-end pitches, all he needs is a little bit of fastball command, and I can see him having the upside of a top 20 starter. That's legitimately in the cards for somebody like Snell if he were to rein it in a bit. How high or low are you on Snell?
You have to love what you saw in the second half, cutting his walk rate, almost exactly in half. The first half, like you said, was ugly. He got a demotion. quality starts on everything, but he aren't everything, but he didn't have his first one until July 24th, which is never good. You mentioned the curveball. I noticed this stat when I was looking up some stuff for Snell. His WRC plus on his curveball is 29, which that's not exactly the a perfect stat, but by comparison, Clayton Kershaw on his curveball is a 27 for WRC plus. So that's trending, and that's a good spot to have.
Yeah, that's a good thing.
Yeah, that's a good thing to have. So yeah, I actually was a little surprised that Snell isn't getting that big boost after the second half, because normally you'd expect him, somebody like that with the pedigree he has and having that kind of second half, maybe to bump up into the top 35-40 starting pitchers, but he's going right now at around pick 220, just inside the top 60 starters. So yeah, I'd be in a spot to take the chance and hope the second half is a sign of things to come, and he worked through everything in the first half, which is nice to see. The Rays kind of they let him take his lumps, get back to the minors, get some confidence back, and when he came back, he was the guy. So I'm excited for him.
Still a kid, 25, but he looks like he's 19 out there. And
yeah.
I mean, he's got a wacky delivery, but again, if he's able to hone it in a bit, we could really see a breakout from him. The price is fair, but it's really hard. I've done a few mocks and a few actual drafts, and I haven't ended up with him yet. That's not to say I won't have a lot of shares of him, just because at the end of the day, I think that his stuff is electric and he could end up breaking out this year. The problem is that, you know, Mike Clevinger is around him, and I'm absolutely enamored with Mike Clevinger going into this year. Kevin Gausman, your boy over with Baltimore, I've been in love with him for multiple years. I think that he could be in a position to finally take a meaningful step up in his production. Denelson Lamet, who I am high on. I don't know if I'm as high as everybody else is, but I like him a lot. He's going right in the same region as Blake Snell as well. So there's a lot of guys around him that I've ended up drafting instead, but I still think that Blake Snell is one of those guys that you can get at the, you know, pretty later stages of your draft that you can end up, you know, really reaping some really good benefits from, based on the fact that he has that upside. And really, in a game where we're looking for starters to go a good amount of innings and get a ton of strikeouts, if he cuts his walks down and remains pretty consistent in that, then he really won't have a big workload kind of restriction this year, right? He'll probably have more of a pace where he'll hit 170-ish innings, and that's really, really valuable, especially from a guy that has enough in his arsenal to really strike out 9-10 per nine if it came down to it. So yeah, I'm a fan. We'll see what happens. Let's move on to the next guy in the starting rotation here, and that's going to be Jacob Faria. I'm continually on the bandwagon here. I noticed a couple springs ago, not last year, but the year before, that his curveball was really, really solid, and he has a pretty decent mix of pitches, fastball, curveball, slider, changeup. Last year ended up getting a 3.43 ERA, 1.18 whip. What are you thinking about Jacob Faria going into this year? Pretty much set in stone, he will be in the rotation.
Yeah, that's a good sign. The one thing I noticed, that he didn't pitch enough innings to qualify among starters, but if he would have, he'd have been in the top 25 among hard hit rate, which is a good sign. His K rates did fluctuate a little bit in the minors, but he didn't seem to have any issues with doing that in the majors last year. Maybe just something more to keep an eye on, but I'm not really worried about it. Yeah, he's going right now in your top 70 starters. It's a good buy opportunity. Maybe there's an innings cap this year, maybe there isn't, but it's a good spot for him. I'm high on Faria.
Yeah, the first five starts he had a 2.23 ERA and a 0.9 whip. Pretty decent ground ball rate, not exceptional, but pretty average. And then almost 10 strikeouts per nine and a 60% first pitch strike rate as well. When he went to the second half, he had 11 starts and he ended up having a 4.14 ERA, 1.34 whip. The metrics backed it up. It actually showed that he outperformed it a bit. It was a 4.84 expected ERA. The ground balls went down. The fly balls went up. The walk rate went way up to 4.3 walks per nine, and then the strikeout rate dropped. Part of that was probably induced by the 52% first pitch strike rate, but my worry is that he is more of that pitcher than he was the first five starts he had. My hope is that he ends up being somewhere in the middle. If I'm projecting for this year, I would assume that he's going to be closer to like a 3.8, 3.9 ERA, which is pretty useful still in this day and age. I think last year the average ERA in baseball was like four, six, I want to say. I can't say off the top of my head, but somewhere in that vicinity, like 4.65, somewhere in that vicinity. And, you know, if he ends up somewhere in that range, 3.94 with pretty decent strikeout rate, which I think he will continue to have, then that's obviously a pretty quality starter for you. 2.50 is his average draft position right now, and that's obviously a little bit past Blake Snell, but at the same time, going around probably a lot of closers, Michael Franco types, Chad Green, Mark Trumbo. I think, you know, Sean Manaea is pretty much the only name down there that I'm like really in for this year. Maybe Addison Russell as well, based on the fact that nobody's probably on him. But other than that, like Faria pretty much is in a good spot that you can probably get a good amount of value from him. At the same time, it's, you know, there is some risk. He is still mighty young. He still needs some, you know, polishing in his arsenal in terms of commanding it and such. But it, in short, I think that he's a pretty quality pitcher. He has the upside to be like a starting pitcher three this year. You're probably going to draft him as a 5 or 6, and he, you know, could be able to potentially give you a good amount of value based on that cost. So I'm pretty in on Faria. We'll see what happens, but it could end up being really good.
In the slow draft I'm in, this is interesting. He actually went 3.5 rounds ahead of Snell. He was going up he was going up there around Salazar, John Gray, Lance McCullers. He was up in that tier. Someone went pretty high in on Faria. I didn't notice that until just now. I was looking for him while you were talking. I was like, oh, wait, did he not get drafted yet? And then I see he's all the way up there. I was like, oh, damn. All right, somebody's way in on him. So that's interesting. That's got to be close to his high pick for an FBC so far.
Well, if you compare the two, Faria doesn't have as much velocity or movement on his fastball, but he commands it better. Blake Snell has a much better fastball, but he commands it much worse. Snell's curve is much more electric than Faria's, but Faria's slider had better results last year. And then the changeup is also better or in favor of Faria at this point as well. So like, really, I don't really hate the fact that somebody took Faria ahead of Snell, but at the same time, I think Snell possesses the higher upside. We also haven't seen Faria really go a high amount of innings yet. I think 150 or so is his max in the minors. I'd have to look it up, but somewhere in that vicinity is like his high. And Snell's probably ready to go a little bit above that if he were to get the walks in check and stuff. But that is pretty interesting that people took him like 3 rounds ahead, because I think that that's a little crazy.
Yeah. You're really hoping he hits taking him there.
Yeah, I agree. I wouldn't condone doing that. The next guy slotted into the rotation at this moment, I don't necessarily think that it will play out this way, but it very well could, is Nathan Eovaldi. Obviously coming off a lost year in 2017 where he was recovering from Tommy John surgery. I don't know, was it his second one of his career? I can't remember. It probably is.
I think so. He's always hurt. I mean, that's the, you know, before he got hurt, they were talking about moving him to the bullpen because he had issues going deep into games, third time through the lineup. And I just, when I saw that he was projected to be in the starting rotation, I thought that was a bit odd considering the state of the Rays' current bullpen.
The bullpen's garbage as of right now. I mean, we'll go through a couple names, but yeah, like my thing about Eovaldi is I've always been really intrigued by his velocity, and I think everybody has been at this point, because he's always been a 95, 96, 97 mile an hour guy, a past Paul Spohr favorite that I know a lot of people were involved with back when he was in his Marlins days. The strikeouts have never really been there. They've been kind of league average at best. The Rays obviously wanted to pick him up because they wanted to get some value after, you know, pretty much holding him as a, you know, redshirt guy for a year after Tommy John and everything. But the ground ball rate is spectacular. It's been 50% or better his last 2 years that he's pitched. He's done a decent job of limiting home runs. Mind you, 2016 was really, really bad in that setting, but like at the same time, you can probably blame some of that on his injury at that point, probably not able to control and stuff. But pretty decent first pitch strike rate, does a decent job of not walking guys. Maybe the Rays can find something out there that other teams haven't and make him more of a like 4 ERA guy as opposed to like a 4.2, 4.3 guy. But I don't hate the move. I just, you know, there's gonna be an innings limit because he's coming off Tommy John. He has electric stuff. He very well could go to the bullpen because we ultimately need better arms there, especially with higher velocity and such. And the strikeout numbers really aren't there. So, I mean, he's a decent bet in AL only if you want to kind of get a guy that can be like a roster filler or get you a few starts in the season and everything. But I think as the season goes on, it's going to get a little worse.
Yeah, I, again, it just doesn't... I would think, you know, the situation that the Rays are in, and as much as you can get for relievers in this trade market, you'd want to put somebody like that in the bullpen, but, you know, boost up his trade value. You've seen guys like with that similar skill set, the high ground ball rate, that they go to the bullpen, their K's boost up. I think that's where I think he'll end up as like a seventh, eighth inning guy for them. So.
Yeah, Matt Andrees is probably the guy that will slot in the rotation, in my opinion. They used him as a long reliever at times last year. They also used him as a starter. Always been a guy that's been a little bit intriguing, not necessarily a high-level prospect in any way or a high-level fantasy player in any way, but I did just want to mention him as somebody that will probably get at least 10 starts for this team this year, more likely 15 or 16, somewhere in that region. The last 2 years, he's started, you know, over 36 games for the Rays, and I think that he'll end up being somewhere in that vicinity coming into this year, somewhere in the 15 start mark. Do you have any thoughts on Andrees?
He's more just somebody to keep on the radar for two start weeks. I know he's had a couple of decent moments over the 2 years he's been up with Tampa. Start in Oakland comes to mind off the top of my head. That was a pretty big strikeout game for him. So there's a little something there if you're in the streaming or two start market. So
yeah, Austin Pruitt's also projected to be in the bullpen, but he did a pretty decent job with the Rays last year. He did a pretty good job against holding, like his walk to strikeout rate was pretty good against lefties and righties for the most part. Strikeout rate wasn't amazing in the second half, but he did a good job of limiting walks, almost a 50% ground ball rate in the second half, 67% first pitch strike rate. Like, that's something that is usually good leading indicators of success. And Pruitt, while he's going to be slated for the bullpen, there is a possibility that he ends up starting the year in the rotation. That's how good he was in the second half. So I like Pruitt from that sense. He's not, again, just a very deep AL only type ad if you're going to be thinking about that. But I mean, if we're being honest, the Rays have maybe like seven guys that are mixed league viable at this point, and that includes their pitching staff. So I mean, these are a long shots at best.
Yeah, no, I agree. Pruitt's kind of in this a little bit of the same boat as Andrees. Yeah, somebody to just keep an eye on, see if he ends up getting some spot starts, but nothing really to get excited about.
Guys that Matt will probably cover at length are obviously Brent Honeywell, Rays number one prospect. He has electric stuff. I can't wait for him to come up to the majors. I'm assuming it'll be mid 2018. I don't think if he ends up starting the year on the club, then I would be ecstatic about that. But ultimately, I think that he will be a mid-season call up. Jose De Leon, I think that he could end up being a reliever for the Rays, especially if the bullpen stays anywhere near the way it is now. But if he isn't, then he still needs to work on his command. He has a lot of work to do. He had a lot of injury issues last year, but that is a name to keep in the back of your mind. He could end up opening the year on the club, but it's really hard to say at this point. I have to see what happens in camp. Ryan Yarbrough is also another guy that could get some meaningful time this year. Jamie Schultz. So just keep those names filed away in the back of your mind when thinking about this team as of right now, because it definitely could. They're going to be rotating pitchers a ton this year, I think. I don't know. How do you think that this rotation, if you had to say the last two, or how about the last guy in the rotation and then the first guy up after that, who would you choose?
I do think it will be Andrees, at least to start the season. Again, we'll see how we'll check in on Eovaldi's health. That makes the most sense to me. And I feel like De Leon's somebody, if he can show some good control early, that he'd be the first one they'd give the crack to. Honeywell, they're gonna keep him down as long as they possibly can. Like you're saying, midseason is a good time to get him up there. So I do actually think, if I had to bet, I would go Andrees and then De Leon.
Yeah, I do want to say that the Rays will more than likely bring up four or five prospects this year, including Honeywell, including De Leon, also Jake Bowers. Justin Williams has a chance to come up. Willy Adames obviously will come up. Christian Arroyo will come up. I mean, so that's a number of guys that they'll bring up in one season, a real young core that they're probably going to try and build around. So if the Rays are out of it after a couple months, I would foresee that being the route that they go. Their bullpen, I will be willing to talk about two guys, and that is, we've already touched on Pruitt, we've already touched on Andrees, who are right now slated to be in the bullpen, but Dan Jennings and Alex Colome are the only ones that I find relatively interesting at this point. Ryan Stanek is in the minor leagues, or projected to be in the minor leagues right now, and he has electric stuff. I think he could be the closer of the future, but he just has nowhere where it's going. He has no idea where it's going. He's he's the wild thing out there. Like, that's what he is. And Chiwi, who as well is in the minor league bullpen right now, according to Roster Resorts. But, you know, as of right now, Alex Colome, Dan Jennings is good against lefties, but Colome, there's a chance he gets traded. His skills are pretty apparent at this point, but are you willing to draft Colome right now, not knowing whether he will be with the Rays and whether he might be like more of a setup option on another team?
I'd still give him a shot. I know there was a report over the weekend. I don't know who put it out there, but that the Cardinals weren't as interested as originally reported. That could be a smokescreen, or maybe there is some truth to that. But I do think that there's a chance that Colome gets traded to there, even if it's, you know, in June or July. I'm good with taking the risk because the skills are good enough that even if you only get two and a half months of saves, you can kind of go from there. He's never probably going to get back to 16 when he had a strand rate of 93%, back down to 72% left on base rate last year, normalized a little bit, which is why you see the ERA climb. But he's still somebody I'm pretty high on as a closer.
Yeah, if he was you're right about that report. He is not the guy that they are looking for in St. Louis, at least according to that report. There's a very good chance that they are looking for Colome as well as Archer. But I'm thinking that if Colome were to go to St. Louis, he would be the closer there. I'm going through with my drafts and everything, assuming he's going to be the closer of whatever club he's on. If he is on the Rays, then he was a top 10 closer last year. I don't really see anything changing this season. The Rays obviously weren't that successful in the wins column. So it's really not that big of a deal if he ends up staying with the Rays. He's still a really quality reliever at this point, and I think he'll end up once again being a top 10 guy. As far as Ryan Stanek, he's probably one of the better handcuffs to have behind him if he's able to kind of reel things in a bit. But in general, this bullpen is really shitty right now, and they need to make a couple moves to – I mean, they do this every year. They always kind of pile together a bunch of random tools and put them together in the bullpen and hope it all works out. Last year, it didn't work out as well as they probably hoped, but they always try and just build a lot of quality arms in the minor leagues and then hope that some of them kind of work out, whether it be in the rotation or the bullpen the year they come up. It's kind of up to them, but that's why I think De Leon isn't necessarily – going to be up as a starter. He could end up being one of the high leverage relievers that we have. It's just hard to tell at this point.
Yeah, that's true. They could end up needing De Leon in the bullpen regardless of how his control ends up at the start of the season. Unfortunately, I noticed you guys have Chaz Rowe penciled in as your bullpen. As an Orioles fan, I hope that doesn't happen a lot to you in high leverage situations, because that movie does not end well. There really isn't anything to get excited about on the current projected roster past Colome from a fantasy expert other than Jennings. But with him being really their only probably steady lefty, are they really going to be eager to put him into that ninth inning role?
Yeah, I doubt it.
Yeah. So it could get ugly quick, unfortunately.
All right. Well, on that depressing note, while we wrap up once again,
sorry,
I just got to admit this too, by the way, because I am a little bit immature at my core. Whenever I say your name, Randy, I always think of Brandon St. Randy from, what is it? Zach and Miri Make a Porno. Have you ever seen that movie?
Yeah, I have, but I don't remember that.
It's like Justin Long.
Yeah.
Brandon St. Randy's like,
okay.
All male cast, like Glenn Ross. And he's like, no. More like, yeah, I don't want to go real inappropriate with it, but you know, you get the gist.
Yeah, I get a lot of the Austin Powers, "Do I Make You Randy?" over the course of my life. So that's always been a fun experience.
I'm pretty sure when you got welcome to the our little staff chat that we have, that's like the first thing I did. Soon as I found out there, you know. So I apologize for pretty much being that stereotype of whenever somebody hears your name, they, you know, do the Austin Powers thing. But yeah,
nah,
I
thought it was funny.
But yeah, once again, tell everybody where you can be reached on Twitter and anything that you're working on currently.
Again, I'm at on Twitter, I'm at RTH222, working on stuff for the draft guide for Friends with Fantasy Benefits. I also write over at Head and Heart Sports with some good friends of mine that I grew up with. Do not so much fantasy stuff over there, but we've got some NFL pieces up. And I actually, back before the winter meetings, wrote a free agency preview that's still extremely relevant considering how this offseason is going. So check that out. Just working on stuff for the draft guide. And I have the ADP piece that was up last week. So check all that out.
Awesome. Yeah, really excited to have you on this year. I like your stuff, and I think that you're going to bring a lot to the table. So I'm definitely happy to have you aboard, man. Thanks for all the content you've done currently and what you're going to do as the season rolls along. I'm excited for it. And hope you're excited too.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. Thanks, Mike.
Yeah, yeah. You can reach me on Twitter at Mike Werner, FWFB. I'm going to continue writing for Baseball HQ this year. I'm going to be doing some player capsules for Fangraphs as well. Obviously, we have the draft guide coming for Friends with Fantasy Benefits. That's going to be coming out in a few weeks. We're almost getting in on editing and everything, so you'll definitely be getting that soon. It's only going to cost a few bucks. Help us out, and it'll be well worth your money. Also, please keep on listening to Matt's Prospect Minutes after this show, because it's really good content and kind of gives you a leg up on your league mates and lets you know who's going to be coming up in the near or long-term future for each and every one of the organizations that we're going through and everything. But yes, keep on going to the site. Please rate and review us and do all that stuff. For Randy and myself, thank you for listening, and good luck in your drafts.